Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine Food Friday, August 9th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the show, we meet the three minds behind a new vegan cookbook, Compassionate Cuisine, 125 plant-based recipes from our vegan kitchen. Linda Soper-Colton, Sarah Bone, and Kathy Stevens are here in the studio with some of those 125 recipes, and they're ready to answer your questions. So if you are interested in the health benefits of a vegan diet or you're looking to make a fully plant-based meal, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. We will go hog wild on this show. And when I say that, I mean a happy, well-adjusted, well-cared-for hog. The number is 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Vegan cooking coming up after the news. Hi, once again, welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff, it's Food Friday, and today we explore vegan cooking and the plant-based diet with three folks. Chef Linda Soper-Colton is culinary instructor and certified health coach. She graduated from New York's Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts. Sarah Bone is a chef, culinary instructor, and a fellow grad of the aforementioned culinary school. Sarah's classes were voted the best vegan cooking classes by Hudson Valley Magazine in 2018. And Kathy Stevens is the founder of Catskill Animal Sanctuary. Together with Linda and Sarah, the three teamed up to write the sanctuary's first vegan cookbook, Compassionate Cuisine, 125 plant-based recipes from our vegan kitchen. So if you have a question about the vegan diet, vegan recipes, you're invited to call now, and I know that many of you have called in with vegan questions throughout our Food Friday run here over the last 8 or 10 years, or however long we've been doing it. This is a great time to focus on vegan diet. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. You can tweet us at WAMCVoxPop. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Kathy, Sarah, Linda, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ray.
Great to be here. Yeah,
thank you so much.
Pretty exciting to have you here. And I must say, the food is delicious. I've had a chance to, well, we'll talk about the recipes in a little bit. But the egg-free deviled egg, it's a revelation. And we'll get to that. It's really good. The book is fantastic. It's a beautifully presented cookbook, but it's a lot more than that. And so let's start with Kathy Stevens, founder of the Catskill Animal Sanctuary. And Kathy, you wrote the stories that sort of interweave with the recipes. Tell us about the Animal Sanctuary and how this book came about.
Well, we are a teaching sanctuary that's been around since 2001. We've rescued over 5,000 animals from life or death, many from industry. But we know that the way to make massive change is by connecting the dots between the animals and our lifestyle choices. And so Compassionate Cuisine is one of many programs that we offer that invites good people to understand, you know, once we get what we're doing to the animals and the impact on the planet and our own health, then Compassionate Cuisine is one of the programs that shows people how to make that transition.
One of the things that struck me, and I must say I only got the book about 45 minutes ago, but I've been reading it.
But you're loving it.
The spiritual connection here.
Oh. Well, look. They want their lives as much as we want ours. They're the same as we are in terms of feeling every single emotion we do. We know that about our dogs and cats. We just don't know that about pigs and chickens because the industries are invested in our not knowing that. And so people come to the sanctuary and they are disarmed because they do not expect cows to lick their faces or turkeys to fall asleep in their laps. And we have grown men fairly frequently, people of all ages and genders, be overcome with emotion and ask the question, oh my God, what have I been participating in? So Catskill Animal Sanctuary helps, and this program helps those good people not participate.
And that's one of the beautiful things about this book. And the new book is Compassionate Cuisine, 125 Plant-Based Recipes from Our Vegan Kitchen. And Kathy, you have woven these stories in, and they're fun, touching stories, and there are great illustrations as well. And then there are the recipes. Was this whole thing your idea, this book?
No, it was Linda Soper Colton's idea. The program was my idea, the Compassionate Cuisine program, a way to tell, to hold people's hands who want to make these changes but just don't know where to start. The book was Linda's idea.
All right, Linda, what do you do?
What do I do? I run the Compassionate Cuisine program at the Sanctuary, and I came on board when it was just in its infancy.
And what is that?
It's a program. It started out just with cooking classes, and we built that so that the classes we offer are year-round now, frequently sold-out classes, and we've added to that a food blog probably 3 or 4 years ago. So we do recipes, nutritional information through our website and our food blog. Sarah does on weekends free food demonstrations so that after people take a tour and their hearts are open, they come into a room and Sarah is doing demonstrations of all these recipes and other foods that people feel then empowered that now I can do something. And so that's a great program we offer. And we do all kinds of events and fun things in and off the property.
How long have you been a vegan?
You know, people ask me that, and I was a vegan a long time ago, for a long time, and then I was vegetarian, and so it's got to be 10 years or so now since coming back to veganism.
Sarah, you know, one of the things you can make the emotional case and the spiritual case. Ultimately, a cookbook will not work if the food isn't good.
That's so
and
true.
How do you ensure that food is good? And I got to tell you, it's good. It tastes, it's satisfying stuff.
Well, I'd say for Linda and me, we both have really high standards. And I've been vegan for about 6 years. And I always tell everyone I knew that if the food wasn't good when I went vegan, it wasn't going to last
right.
me. I've always been a foodie, always loved to cook. And I was a chef before I was a vegan chef.
Yeah.
I also have a pastry chef background. So,
I see the cannolis.
Oh, that was actually Linda.
Really?
Yeah, they're fantastic. But yeah, I think, you know, having high standards, having sometimes, you know, memories of foods that we grew up with that have really wonderful memories associated and trying to replicate those great memories. That's another part of it, too.
You know, and before we take a break and then get to the calls and try some food, let's just talk philosophically about the food angle here. Now, as a vegan chef, is it better to try to replicate meals that have meat or to do your own thing and say, you know what, this is just delicious in its own right? To me, it seems like imitating something is not necessarily the best way to go. There are so many delicious dishes you could make that are their own thing.
Right. I think, at least speaking for me, I do a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I think Linda does, too. There's just there's something to be said about recreating favorite dishes that aren't vegan, but also, you know, coming up with brand new dishes that are just an inspiration on their own. That's also another side of it.
I mean, if you called this eggless deviled egg something else, it would still be phenomenal. It really is. Now, you do definitely get a hint of the deviled egg, the classic deviled egg. But it's on its own. I mean, it's so satisfying. Tell us about this dish, then we'll take a break.
So the inspiration for that dish came from a cocktail party that we did on the Sanctuary. It was for sponsors, and we were bringing them on the property to enjoy delicious food and spend time with their animals that they sponsor. So we wanted to create foods that we reminded people, because a lot of the people who sponsor aren't actually vegan. And so we tried to think of recipes that would remind people of, oh, this kind of has this taste and this is familiar. And so that's a lot of what we do. This particular recipe, we use small potatoes and we scoop them out and we make a filling with chickpeas and some beans, chickpeas. And we use black salt, which has a nice sulfury kind of smell and taste to it. And we fill it like a deviled egg. And I will defy anybody to tell us that that does not satisfy that craving for that creamy, luscious yumminess that you get at a cocktail party.
But my point is, the addition of the potato makes it, to me, even more satisfying than a hollowed-out egg.
Right, totally agree.
Okay, so before we take a break here, and the number is 800-348-2551, and we will take calls, 800-348-2551. Let's start with Chapter 1. Getting started, the things that we would need if we were going all plant-based in our kitchen, and you mentioned the black salt. That's a key. That's one of the key things.
You know what? I would say that if you were going to go vegan, and this is Sarah may have a different opinion, I don't think you need anything really special.
Mm-hmm. Reduces your book by several pages.
Well, this book we did without trying to use lots of different ingredients, unusual ingredients. This one has this black salt that you could use. You don't have to use that. And our approach is that it's all just regular food. Most of what we eat, most of what all vegans eat is just food. There's lasagna here that's made with eggplant. We have potatoes in a couple of recipes. We have beans. They're just regular food. It's really nothing fancy. It doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be unusual. So,
well, there are things here that that my kitchen might not have. Now, Rick Orlando, he's huge on the seitan, and he does that a lot. And so we've talked about that. Tempeh, I've never heard of that. I've heard of losing my tempeh, but and I've been known to do that. But what's a tempeh?
Tempeh is how you pronounce it. And
some people say tempeh.
Yeah, maybe they do.
Yeah.
But it's made with soy, and it's fermented soybeans. It's a minimally processed ingredient. You can find it in most stores today, fairly common, and there's so many different things you can do with it. So for lots of people, it's introducing a different ingredient here and there. Maybe I'll try tempeh. Here's a recipe with something different I'm not used to. But you can make bacon with it. You can make meatballs with it. Mm. You can make bolognese sauce with it.
I think I saw a recipe for Swedish meatballs in here.
Got them here.
Oh, you got them here?
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break.
It's your lucky day, Ray.
I got to eat some food here. We are joined today by Chef Linda Soper-Colton, Chef Sarah Bone, and Kathy Stevens of the Catskill Animal Sanctuary. Vegan cooking today on Food Friday, 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Afraid to be wrong. I'll take back my philosophical question about offering analogs of meat-based food with plant-based food. I just tried the Swedish meatballs, and I tried the crab cakes. Not only are they evocative of the original versions of those, they're fantastic on their own right. It is a Food Friday today, vegan cooking. Chef Sarah Bone, Chef Linda Soper-Colton, and Kathy Stevens of the Catskill Animal Sanctuary. Let's talk about the crab cake. That's an amazing thing you've done.
It is an amazing thing.
Can you tell us how you did it, or is it a secret?
Nope.
That was made with some simple ingredients that you probably have in every store. Hearts of palm, which comes in a can or a jar in pretty much every grocery store I've been to. Some peppers, some celery, and some vegan mayonnaise and breadcrumbs. I mean, that's pretty much it. And you just blend it together and bake it or fry it.
But it's, you know,
it's the spices, though, Linda, right?
Yes, and also.
I'm sorry.
Go.
Old Bay seasoning.
Mm-hmm.
So that's often
there
used.
You go.
So we use something that's familiar in a different way, and it evokes those feelings and those familiar kind of tastes that you're looking for.
But so much what makes this great is the texture and the weight. It feels like a crab cake. And so that must have taken a little doing, a little research.
I think what it is with the hearts of palm, you know, you add it to the food processor and just sort of pulse it. You don't want to make like hummus with your hearts of palm.
Right.
But you get that flaky texture, and that's what, traditional crab cakes have a flaky texture.
Right.
So I think it's just replicating a texture there. It has a very mild flavor, so it doesn't taste like something that you might not be familiar with, but it has the beautiful texture.
Well done. The book is Compassionate Cuisine, 125 Plant-Based Recipes from Our Vegan Kitchen. Linda Soper-Colton, Sarah Bone, and Kathy Stevens are here. It's a cookbook from the Catskill Animal Sanctuary. Let's take a couple of calls. One email here, and then we'll jump on the phones. And the number is 800-348-2551. Marion Delmar says, great Food Friday topic. Well, thank you, Mary. Mm-hmm. Subject heading, cleaning non-organic produce. For people who are trying to follow a vegan diet but can't always afford organic produce, what's the best way to clean considerably grown foods? Are there kinds of produce I should especially try to buy organic? And that's from Marion Delmar. Don't all jump at once.
So I would say for the organics, if people haven't heard of the Clean 15, that's put out a list put out by the Environmental Working Group, and that suggests that there are 15 foods that if you can find them organic, those are the ones that are most important.
Like broccoli's on there, right?
Do you know? I don't know the list by heart, but I don't think broccoli's on there,
really?
As a matter of fact. It's things... peaches, a lot of the berries on there, strawberries, apples.
Things that would be sprayed.
Linda,
it's the Dirty Dozen.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's the Dirty Dozen. They go together. The Dirty Dozen are the 12 most pesticide-y, pesticide-laden foods.
Yeah. And it changes every year, too.
And then the 15 are ones that you can pretty safely count on being safe. So, for example, avocados and asparagus are always on that. But they do update.
They're on the Clean 15 or the Dirty Dozen?
On the Clean 15.
I got to get a
berries
an
and
abacus.
Apples.
And interestingly, and thank you for correcting me,
always on the Dirty Dozen, yeah.
Potatoes, for example, I'm pretty sure on the Dirty Dozen. You wouldn't think about potatoes, but those lots of fungicides in the ground. So that's one way to start, is to look at those mm-hmm. lists and see what's good and what's not good. I don't use a commercial cleaner on my foods that I don't buy organic, but I do, you know, I don't know about you, Sarah, but
no,
I use water
I don't either.
And I just, you know, wash and dry them and do the best we can.
We've had this conversation in my house. And so before I get to the phones, and I promise Diane in North Greenbush you'll be first, cleaning, the simple act of cleaning fruit, what is a good and effective way to do it? I try to explain it to my kids and I realize, you know, I might be doing it wrong. What is the best way to clean produce?
I use apple cider vinegar and water in a mixture. That's as high tech as I get. So if I buy berries, I put them in a bowl with water and I put a couple capfuls of apple cider vinegar and I shake it around. It does not leave a taste. And then I dry them and eat them. And that seems to...
So it's a very diluted...
Yes.
Amount of...
Yes.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones now at 800-348-2551. Vegan cooking today with the minds behind Compassionate Cuisine, 125 plant-based recipes. Let's go to Diane in North Greenbush. Thank you for being patient.
Hey, thank you for having this show. My husband and I just started a plant-based diet about 4 weeks ago.
Woohoo!
I have to tell you, I own a business. I've been talking to my clients about nothing but this for 4 weeks because of the difference it makes in our lives. But anyway, I don't want to hold up the phone. I just want to ask you, I just heard at a store that the Beyond Beef burgers are GMO. Do you know anything about the Beyond Beef burgers? They're using them in restaurants. You can get them at Trader Joe's. And they're yummy, but is there an issue with those that you know about? Are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're thinking.
So this is Linda. I thought that the Beyond Burgers were non-GMO, and I thought the Impossible Burgers, okay. So there's two burgers, one you can buy yourself. The Impossible Burgers are served commercially, and I believe that there are GMO ingredients in the Impossible Burgers, but I do occasionally eat Beyond Burgers. It's a guilty pleasure of mine. I do like them.
Same here. This is Sarah. I love them.
Same here. This is Kathy.
Why is that a guilty pleasure?
For me, I try to focus my eating on whole foods that are minimally processed, just because I believe that's the best. And so, but doesn't mean that we don't all have foods. Like I'm looking at Sarah's pie over here that looks delicious,
yeah,
and I'm going to have some of that. So
good.
there's room for everything that
okay.
That,
Well, let's talk. Thank you, Diane, for the call. Let's talk about this Beyond Beef and Impossible Beef. This is a kind of a new craze, and it's all over, and the fast food joints are using it now. Tell us about what it is and how they made it taste pretty good.
I don't know a lot about the process of what went into them. I know that huge money, giant investors are behind both lab-grown meat, which these aren't, and beef and chicken and pork alternatives. Just because they are, the Impossible in particular is astonishingly like a hamburger.
Yeah.
Like you don't, no matter, I haven't had a hamburger in probably 25 years. You never forget taste.
Yep.
You don't forget it. And so it's a little unnervingly like a hamburger, but it doesn't mean it's healthy. They are both extremely processed food. So if people want, from a health perspective, want to wean themselves, but to your point earlier about do you really need the substitutes, a lot of people think they do. Mm. A lot of people aren't willing to just immediately go from hamburgers and steaks and spaghetti and with meat sauce to vegetables. So the Beyond Burger and the Impossible Burger and other similar things, the seitan, the tempeh, fill that need.
It's a bridge.
It's a bridge. Mm-hmm. They can be a bridge for some people.
Interesting. The number here is 800-348-2551. Food Friday, vegan cooking today. And let's go to Rick in Goshen. Hello, Rick.
Hello, Ray. Is it really you?
Possibly.
That's my greeting for you, buddy.
How you doing?
I bought a couple of the, actually, I got a couple of them. Don't matter. I'm talking about the cooking anyway. But anyway, good to hear from you.
All right. Well, and,
all right. The baked ziti, not ziti.
Zucchini.
See, I'm flustered now.
Zucchini, man. It's on the.
No, it's a ziti. I'm looking to make a ziti with. I'm trying to think of a vegetable. You mentioned it before in lasagna.
It says
eggplant.
Zucchini right on the
Okay. Oh, it's eggplant. I'm sorry. You know, I don't normally come off like this. I'm sorry.
That's okay,
man. Know what I want to say. All right. When you do like an eggplant lasagna, okay, eggplant lasagna or a zucchini lasagna, okay. What kind of ingredients would you use in that? And one more question, what's the difference? Because I came in after the program started. I was out. What's the difference between vegan and vegetarian? I heard those remarks. I was like, wow, there's a difference? Okay.
All right. Who wants this?
I can talk about the lasagna, and you can talk about the...
All right, fair enough. Stand by, Rick. Your answers are coming.
Rick.
No, I'm sorry.
No, thanks for asking this question. A lot of people refer to themselves as vegetarian and then say, well, I only eat fish. I'm vegetarian. Well, a fish is not a plant. So
right.
Vegetarians eat no animals, but
right.
They do
okay.
Eat, but they do eat products derived from animals.
So dairy.
So they eat dairy and they eat eggs. Vegans go the next step and avoid any meat from an animal as well as all products from animals. So
okay.
No dairy, no dairy, no eggs, no butter, no cheese.
Ooh. Okay. Well,
but there don't say ooh because there are extraordinary cheeses on the market now.
All right. Now this is good. I'm glad you brought the cheese up because this has been on vegetarian and vegan shows that we've done in the past.
No, it's got me too, Ray.
Okay, well, we're together on this then. The development of cheese that is vegan has not been an easy road.
No, they came to market way too soon. The first one stank.
Yeah, and they're good now?
they're
really
amazing.
So
good.
All right,
and
Rick.
Getting better.
Okay, Rick, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Vegan cooking today with Chef Sarah Bone, Chef Linda Soper-Colton, and Kathy Stevens of Catskill Animal Sanctuary. And now, who's been waiting longer? Laura in New Paltz. Laura, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call and thanks for having the show. I just want to say quickly about the potatoes when you were talking before about washing them from the Dirty Dozen, the Clean 15. Potatoes are GMO, so that's another issue entirely. There's the organic issue and then the GMO issue and then the vegan issue, and they're all separate. And I also want to tell you that some of the cashew cheeses are quite extraordinary. But the reason that I called is that one of the things I'm concerned with, I've been eating this way now for over 40 years, and I greatly appreciate you doing the show, but one of the things that I find that vegans and vegetarians run into are taking supplements, and they have to supplement D3, B12, calcium, magnesium. What happens down the road is when they don't get enough, you know, they have heart problems, their teeth fall out. I mean, so I was wondering what you do about supplementing, and I just want to say one last thing is that what you're doing is helping people make the transition, and that's extraordinary and wonderful and very helpful. But I'm talking about down the road. I'm talking about 20, 30 years down the road of eating this way. You have to really be careful to get certain nutrients, and I was wondering how you address that.
This is a great point, and thank you, Laura, for the call. You do bring this up in the book, and you're fairly adamant that, you know, if you do your job right as far as picking foods, you will not need supplements. But nevertheless, this is wisdom that it or lack of wisdom. I don't know how you would put it. But the knowledge is out there that, yeah, if you're going to go all vegan, eventually you will need supplements. Please disabuse us of this if, in fact, this is not the case.
I would say for a lot of people, they take supplements as insurance. Even people who aren't vegan take supplements because they want that insurance that, gosh, if I'm not eating right all the time, I just want to make sure. And so for a lot of vegans who do say they supplement, I think a lot of people have the same idea. They're taking it for the insurance in case they don't have a complete full diet. But for people who eat whole foods, a variety of foods, you should be able to get nearly all your supplements. I know the one supplement I do take, I take B12. Mm-hmm. And you'll hear a lot of vegans do take B12. I get tested for it, so I knew that in my diet I needed it.
Yeah.
But I think for anybody, I would get tested. Go to your doctor, get your annual physical, you see what you need, and it might not just be because you're on a vegan diet. Mm-hmm. It just might be the way your body processes what you take in, and everybody's different, and you have to behave accordingly.
How about you, Kathy? Do you take supplements?
Every now and then I'll take a B12, but my blood work doesn't indicate that I need to take anything.
Sarah?
I do take B12.
Okay.
And in my research, you know, I found that even people who aren't vegan are chronically low in B12. Mm-hmm. It has a lot to do with our foods being sort of over-sanitized. Mm. So B12 comes from the soil.
Yeah.
And some people think you have to get that through eating meat, but you could also get that through, you know, vegetables you grow in your garden that you're not putting through an intense chemical wash like a lot of the produce we buy in stores. So I do take a spray of B12 every day.
Okay.
I think it's good insurance. But like Linda said, I think it is insurance, you know, and that the idea that you have to take a lot of supplements might be, you know, supplementing a poor diet.
Mm.
So I think it's good to go back, look at your diet, and you can be vegan on potato chips and Pepsi.
Yeah.
But there's so many better things to eat.
Is Pepsi vegan?
I think so.
Interesting.
No, I'm doubting myself. Yes,
Oreos are as well. Hey,
yes,
things
sir.
Are looking better all the
yes,
time.
Sir-y.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. And before we take our next break and then get back to the calls, let's just touch on the GMO issue for a moment that our last caller brought up. You don't strictly have to be against GMOs to be a vegan, right?
No, of course not.
No.
No. You don't have to buy organic. You can look or not look to see if food is genetically modified. It's not easy to always find that out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we live in a world where our food system is so profoundly broken, and there's such collusion between government and the pharmaceutical industries and these massive producers that, honestly, if you want to eat clean, you kind of basically have to grow your own food, and most of us aren't in a position to. And then make sure you get non-genetically modified seeds. So, you know, you just have to kind of do the best you can. Do what you can afford.
And eat local.
And eat local.
A lot of wonderful
and eat local,
farms.
Farmers markets. Good Lord, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things we talk about on this show almost every week is the benefits,
awesome. Yes.
Both for taste and everything else, economically and nutritionally, of eating local. It's one of the things that on this program rings again and again. Kathy Stevens is here from Catskill Animal Sanctuary. Also, Chef Sarah Bone, Chef Linda Soper-Colton. We talk vegan cooking today on the program. And our number is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Little heavy music, but you know, every now and again you need that. That's Peter Frampton doing the old Soundgarden Black Hole Sun. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is the number. 2:41 on a Friday afternoon, Food Friday. Ray Graff with you, joined today by Kathy Stevens and Sarah Bone and Linda Soper-Colton. And I got everyone's name right so far, but there's still enough time for me to screw it up. This email came in from Justin in Clifton Park. And the subject heading is vegan breakfast. The thing I struggle most with and that keeps me from going full vegan is finding filling breakfasts that aren't full of carbs. Carbs affect my body in a very fattening way. If anyone could point me in the direction of some good low-carb filling breakfast ideas, that would be great. And that is from Justin in Clifton Park. You got some good breakfasts in this book.
Yeah, that's a good one. I have, there's a recipe I can recommend in the cookbook, and it is the freezer-friendly breakfast burritos.
Okay.
So I was trying to find a recipe that you could make in bulk and freeze and then heat them up either in your microwave or your toaster oven. And I believe, don't quote me on it, but I think it's 22 grams of protein per burrito.
Yeah.
And they have black beans and tofu and leafy greens. I think there's some onions and peppers in there also and some really wonderful spices.
Yeah.
So there will be some carbs, you know, just looking, you know, because
carbs
beans,
are good.
Yeah, you know, I think in moderation. And if you know that, you know, I think you said you get a fattening effect.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah, but I do think it's great. You're getting the fiber from the beans and the tofu, and the beans have enough protein to really hold you over, and you'll feel satisfied.
Generally speaking, if you have the fiber to counteract the carbs, you're in good shape.
Yep. For so many reasons.
By the way, and you know, one of the reasons I brought up way back at the beginning the efficacy of trying to imitate or come up with your own thing, the thing on the cracker, the spread on the cracker is like nothing I've ever had before. What do you call that?
That is the walnut.
The thing on the cracker.
That's on the cracker.
I've been in radio a long time, lady. It's the best I can do.
I like that as a title. That we should have called it that.
That's a good one.
It's been a long week.
So it's a roasted mushroom and walnut pate.
Yeah. Oh, I love this.
And it's also super easy to make. This is one of Linda's recipes, and I made it for today. It is roasted mushrooms, shallots, garlic, rosemary, some tamari soy sauce, olive oil. You roast all that together, and then you puree it with some walnuts and add some lemon juice.
It's really good.
And it's delicious.
Yeah, it is. And you had me at soy sauce. I got to be honest with you. Almost anything. All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Linda in Hurley. Linda, is this your second call or are you, this is your first?
No, today it's my first call.
Well, hello and welcome back, my friend. You're on.
Hi. Hi. You were talking about Beyond Burgers, and I just want to tell you that I made Beyond Burgers yesterday for the first time for me and a friend whom I call Mr. Meat, because he always likes meat. And surprisingly enough, he said, you know, it tasted like meat, and, you know, he'd be happy to have them again. So, you know, that
good.
Was good. And I'm a vegetarian, so I haven't had burgers in a long time, but, you know, it did taste pretty good. But what I want to say, as far as the nutrition facts, each burger is like it's like 31% of your total fat for the day, 25% of your saturated fat for the day, and there seem to be 16% of your salt, sodium, for the day, although it does have like 32% of your protein for the day.
Which is why I said it was a guilty pleasure of mine, because
yeah.
I don't want to eat that kind of food.
Not something to eat every day.
Can you grill them?
And it's,
Can you put them on the charcoal?
They hold up wonderfully.
Oh, okay.
They're so good on the grill.
But I'd want to have
three or
four.
I also wanted to say, as far as ingredients, first ingredient is water, then pea protein isolate, expeller pressed canola oil, refined coconut oil, and then a whole list of things that are less than 2%.
Okay.
Yeah, you're certainly not. We are certainly not eating them for our health. We are eating them. We vegans or omnivores who enjoyed the taste of hamburger are eating them to have that, especially in the summer, to have a burger in the summer.
Yes.
But, you know, in the same way that, that hamburgers aren't healthy, Beyond Burgers and Impossible Burgers aren't healthy, even though version 2 of the Impossible Burger has, I know it has a lot less
version
salt.
Version 2? And the really impossible burger?
What are they? Yeah, the extremely impossible burger. It's supposed to be a little lighter, I think, on the salt and the fat. Don't quote me on that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Linda, thank you so much for the call. 800-348-2551, the number. Vegan Cooking Today. Emily in Plainfield, Mass. You're on.
Hi. I was listening to the discussion of supplements, and I have been learning a lot about herbal, both nutrition and medicine, and I learned from a friend and also Susan Weed's book, Healing Wise, about making herbal infusions, which is to say, I am getting a lot of things I used to take supplements for, like iron and B-complex and calcium and magnesium, from making these what are essentially really strong herbal teas, especially nettle and oat straw, and you can buy herbs in bulk. I get mine from a supplier in the Midwest, and you make these teas that are like a cup of herbs to fill a quart jar with boiling water and let them steep 4 hours, and it's a way to get those nutrients without taking processed supplements. Your body actually accepts them better. I am not vegan, but although we eat vegan often, we just eat a lot of vegetarian and vegan, and we eat meat, but that's how I've been getting supplements without taking supplements, which sometimes, like, don't taste very good and are hard to absorb. So I just wanted to throw that out of the mix.
Well, I saw our chefs nodding there.
Yeah, I'm definitely not. This is Sarah speaking. I just finished up an herbalism course, and I've been learning about the infusions also. And I love how mineral rich they are. And it's a really fun, inexpensive way to get all those really powerful minerals in your diet.
Cheaper
and
than taking a supplement, I would imagine.
And Emily, if you would like to make a visit to Catskill Animal Sanctuary, you are welcome to bring your gloves and pick about 40 lifetimes worth of nettle out of our sheep field.
So many.
Yeah,
that's nice of you.
I'm starting to grow it in my own garden, but yeah, you can easily grow it. But I mean, also being a woman of a certain age, I was just getting sick of taking calcium and iron because it tasted terrible. But these don't; these are easier to take in. So just wanted to add that to the supplement discussion.
Well, Emily, thank you so much for the call. Have a great weekend. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Before the next call, which of the chefs, Sarah or Linda, did the lasagna?
This is Linda. I did that.
Oh, my gosh. It's amazing.
But anybody can do that.
Well, tell us about what's in it.
And that's that was the thinking behind the recipes in the book, is that these recipes came from our classes, and we wanted people to know outside of classes and our fence posts, basically, that you can make these recipes at home. They're not hard. They're not crazy. So this is eggplant cutlets, and people think that you need an egg so that you can kind of dredge your eggplant.
Right.
But you can do the same thing. I use flour. I use non-dairy milk. I used an almond milk and breadcrumbs. And you do the same exact thing. And I baked them so they weren't even fried. And then I made a ricotta cheese out of tofu and some nutritional yeast and some lemon juice. And I made tomato sauce.
What is nutritional yeast?
So nutritional yeast is something that it's a great ingredient to have in your pantry. It lends like a savory, cheesy flavor to lots of things, not just for vegans, but it's not a live yeast. So it's not like you use in baking.
Right.
And it comes in a little package. It's flaky and yellow. And I put it in sauces and soups and stews. So you can sprinkle it on popcorn for a little cheesy taste. But it really is a nice ingredient to have if you're making vegan cheese, because it does give you that umami kind of like deliciousness that is savory and nice.
The lasagna is legit. I'll be
it's
honest.
Legit, it's I'm legit. Telling you.
You know, my buddy Rocco DeFazio, he's from Troy, and he has famous pizza and Italian place. One of his sons is vegan, and Rocco is, he emails me a lot. I came up with this vegan recipe and this he would be impressed with the lasagna.
You got to get Rocco.
Got to connect us,
some
Ray.
Of this eggplant lasagna.
Oh, yeah. Make a trip to DeFazio's Pizza.
Once you hear from Rocco, you'll be hearing from Rocco a lot. All right, let's go to the next call, and we go over to Evelyn in Ashfield, Mass. Evelyn, you're on.
Yes, hello. I'm a certified nurse midwife. I do a lot of primary care, and I'm actually not doing obstetrics anymore, but I work in reproductive health and primary care. And I eat largely a plant-based diet. I'm not vegan. But what I find distressing about what I keep hearing in your conversation is this reference to how contaminated our food sources are. And all I have to say to you is that doesn't sound like any of you have really traveled the world, because when it comes to contamination in food, we're doing pretty well in the United States, and we have many, many, many more choices. And part of that is because of the riches we have here and the regulatory system that we have. So I just would really caution you about referring to our food sources as so contaminated, because they're not. And the access that you have to, you know, vegan cheeses and that kind of thing, these foods are heavily processed, largely, and they take a real toll on the environment. So I think that you need to curb your absolutism, and I'm all for sticking to a plant-based diet, but not with the kind of militancy that I hear in this conversation.
Well,
thanks.
Thanks, Evelyn. I got to say, you know, I'm fairly sensitive to militant veganism, and I haven't felt threatened at all here today.
I have to say that I've been doing this work for 18 years, and I've never been called a militant vegan. And in fact,
look, you are wearing jackboots. I mean, I think no, you're not.
But I would just simply, not to prolong this, I would just simply say she's ill-informed.
Well,
You know, relative to other places in the world, sure, our water is cleaner, but our soils are absolutely, absolutely being depleted. There's a farm that was recently sold and is in the multi-year process of becoming organic, but before it was, I would watch the planes fly over and drop hundreds of gallons of lemon yellow pesticide on top of the corn. So I just, to be honest, it seems like she's perhaps a little bit in denial or hasn't done enough reading.
Okay. Well, let's just take another call and hope everything gets better. Over to Angelica in Hatfield. Angelica, you're on.
Hi.
Hello.
I was great to hear about all kinds of vegan options. So I thought it might be worthwhile to say that there are vegan options to get omega-3s. A lot of people use fish oil to get omega-3s. And with all this stuff we've heard about plastic bags going into fish and all weird things in the ocean, I don't eat fish. But flaxseed oil or chia seeds, there are great vegan options for getting really good omega-3s. And they help every cell in your body. I'm not trying to sell them. I have no stock
okay.
in any.
Are you sure? Okay. You're not the CEO
You know what? I have to tell you, I mean, I feel so much better. I don't know if it's a placebo effect or whatever, but if I get some, even just some flax seeds, put them with some water and soy sauce, a little soy sauce, and let them get soft a little, I can mix them in with anything, whether hummus or even some plain. I mean, they're a little sticky. I grant you they get a little sticky. And chia seeds, you know, well, people make puddings and desserts of chia seeds or they add them. But, I mean, it just the payoff of the omega-3s, they are so good for the cell membranes. They let things go into the cell that are supposed to go in and let things out.
I think Linda wants to talk.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that those are great, great suggestions, because if we can find natural ways to get the things we need and it doesn't come out of a bottle, that's always, I think, a great way to look at things. And flax seeds are terrific. And you know what? If you grind them up, it makes the nutrients more available to you. So if you're eating them whole, you might want to buy them ground or grind them up. And the same with chia.
I should have said that.
Oh,
right,
okay.
Ground, right. You can soften them.
Yeah.
Right, well, I've heard you can either soften them with water for a little while. But
if you do grind them, I would say grind not too many at a time.
Correct.
And not on too high speed so they don't get too hot, because then the oil can get, the oil is what you need. You need the oil from the seeds to get the omega-3s.
Yes.
So you want to keep them kind of cool. Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it very much. Over to Laura in Pleasant Valley. Hello, Laura in Pleasant Valley.
Hi, thanks so much for taking the call. How are you?
Oh, we're okay. How are you?
Good. So I'm sitting here with my 9-year-old daughter, Liberty, and the timing of the show is perfect because last night at the dinner table, we were actually discussing veganism, and she had asked me, which I'm going to turn it over to you because you guys are probably better equipped to answer the question than I am, about the philosophies behind why people choose to go vegan as opposed to vegetarian. We've discussed, you know, the meat industry, and she understands animal cruelty factors, but why veganism, if you could help her understand that. And also, we get our milk from a local raw dairy farm, and she wanted to know, do vegans ever use raw animal products if they're ethically sourced?
Okay.
Vegans do not. What's your daughter's name, Laura?
Liberty.
Her name is
Liberty.
Liberty.
Beautiful. Hi, Liberty.
Hi.
Hi, sweetie. So, no, vegans do not eat any animal products, and here's why, sweet pea. You're 9 years old. I'm going to tell you something that's going to make you sad.
Oh, boy.
When cows, there's no such thing as a milk cow, so cows, we have to make the cows pregnant for them to create milk, and then we take their babies away from them so that we can use the milk for humans, and the mothers cry and the babies cry, and then the babies are either turned into veal if they are boys, usually if they are boys. Many of the girls are put back into that same system, and the system, sweetie, is so hard on those mother cows that instead of living to 20 or 25 years old, which a cow does in a natural environment, they live only to about 4 years old because they're so physically and emotionally stressed. So nobody is trying to harm animals. We're just trying to eat.
Okay.
But that's the truth about there are many, about why veganism is an important next step after vegetarianism.
Well, thank you for terrorizing the 9-year-old, Kathy. Way to go. I appreciate it. Let's quickly grab another call here before we wrap up. David in New Paltz. David, you're on.
Yes. As a child, growing up on a small 15-acre farm, we used to raise our own beef.
Yeah.
And we would get a 6-week-old little calf.
Yeah.
And we would raise it to maybe a year.
Yeah.
And we would give it a name.
All right, we're almost out of
time.
And
it would become a pet.
Yeah.
And it was like eating your dog or your cat, you know, because
right.
It was like part of the family, you know?
Okay, well, listen, we'll have to leave it there. If people want to find out more about the Catskill Animal Sanctuary, where do they go, Kathy?
www.casanctuary.org and our brand new podcast, All Beings Considered.
Oh, isn't that clever?
I've heard that before. Ray Graff?
Way to go. Hey, thank you all for being here. Support comes from Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasonings, Sheffield, Massachusetts. Handcrafted in small batches, infused sea salts, peppers, and blends, specializing in garlic and hot pepper blends. RollingRockSalt.com for upcoming events. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, BlackSheepDeli.com. Pioneer Valley Food Tours, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering walking tours, visiting local food producers, and tasting a selection of seasonal specialties, PioneerValleyFoodTours.com. At River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalley.coop. Thanks again to Linda Soper-Colton, Sarah Bone, and Kathy Stevens for joining us today. Remember the book, Compassionate Cuisine, 125 Plant-Based Recipes from Our Vegan Kitchen. Thank you for listening. Great calls. And thanks to Zach Malloy. Zach, there's food here. You're invited to, after your duties are done, to come in and eat some food. Barb King, same with you. Barb took the calls. Our producer, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a great weekend. Remember, Monday at 2. Set your alarm. It's a medical Monday. Right now, stand by for the best of our knowledge.